Okay, so there you can see how this panel discussion is now going to unfold. But let me just also draw from Dan Cork's position that he doesn't see the census being in particular jeopardy, but potentially more the American Community Survey as being in jeopardy, if I heard you correctly. So I've heard two different things here, so it's going to be interesting to see how we integrate all of that into this paper that we're going to have to write after the session. I think that we're all obligated to bring forward in the public interest. For me, one of the greatest concerns, too, as more of a methodologist in epidemiology than a content expert in anything beyond, I guess, environmental epidemiology in my career, is the notion of the methods. And what I've heard spoken about here this afternoon is that how our toolkit, as I said at the very beginning, is going to be harmed by these particular movements. So, if I could ask the panelists to come to the table, the main speakers who are the content experts in these various areas, and I'd like to ask the audience to please mention your name and what institution you're associated with, and then we can feel, if you want your question to go to any particular person, by all means. There is one microphone in the middle. I would ask you to please stand in a line behind the microphone to ask your questions. Thanks so much. Okay, so the first question, please. And if you'd like it to go to any particular one, please, if you want it to be general, let it be general.
There's no one in particular. My name is Lindsay Bean. I'm an independent researcher and public health writer in Baltimore, Maryland. And when I saw the title for this talk, I thought, oh, well, this will be interesting. We'll be talking about third world countries that can't afford to do the census. So I'm sitting here with a growing sense of panic. I want to thank all of you for the work that you're doing because it's so fundamental, not just to public health, but to world sanity. One of you was talking about how this will affect the federal, I think it was Mr. Sparks talking about federal allocations. It will also affect political redistricting. And so I don't like to think about conspiracy theories. It gives the conspirators much too much credit. But in this context, somebody could really make hay with this whole thing. So really, my question is, why was this not a mandatory session for every member of APHA? Why were you not included in the opening and closing sessions of this wonderful conference? Because if what you predict comes true, there's going to be no need for follow-up APHA conferences. I'm sorry to be so negative, but I find this whole thing very frightening. And I would just end by saying, I hope that you will write and write and write and write so that this gets public. It's got to be part of the public discourse. This kind of topic is kind of sidelined because, oh, it's just the data people and this isn't very interesting. This is it's the denominator of everything we talk about. So I would also ask you if you have any suggestions of what we can do. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Yes, thank you for your comments. I can't respond for APHA, but I can say the four of us, we're all for mandatory participation. But as I say, this is a political decision right now, and at least in terms of my collaboration that I do with the Census Project, I'd encourage you to go onto our website, and it'll give you some instructions as to what you can do and how you can sign up and learn more about it.
Any other comments?
I think there's probably a need for some strategic communications around this issue, looking at it from different points of view. One is that the public needs to understand how important census and data is to public health, and I think probably right now they don't. And the second is those, I can speak to the UK, but politicians and influencers and decision makers who have either can influence government or are in government itself and would be interested in the subject need to be approached and talked to about what this might mean, because I think, Lindsay, as you said, it's very much been under the radar. And so I think there's something about talking about this openly to many different stakeholders to make a difference.
Thanks, Shirley. Robin, would you like to say anything about how one makes anything compulsory in APHA in terms of attendance? No comment. Okay, but I think it's not, I think this is emblematic of some of the issues. You know, how do we get this word out in a compulsory way to every kid and every voter to make sure that we vote into government people who will protect the public interest? So it raises in my mind questions about how that vote is going and whose interests are really being protected by those that we vote into governance. So, next question, please.
Perry, Pennsylvania Department of Health. I don't think we're going to sway any politician ever by saying that what you're doing is bad for public health. They just don't care. What they do care about is pressure from state and local governments and business consortiums who need this data. My question actually is to Dr. Shake. Now that the survey, the voluntary survey which replaced the census, happened in Canada, is there a big backlash and are they moving back towards an actual census again?
It is quite interesting that at the time the decision was made by the government to eliminate the census, there were so many groups at that time before the survey actually happened who were critical of what the government had done. And that included provincial governments, municipal governments, business leaders, NGOs, academia, you name it, and everybody, you know, wanted their voice heard that this was really, really a bad decision. There have been editorials in newspapers to bring the census back. I think the government realizes that they made a bad decision. But the view is that this government is so proud of whatever it has done that its pride is going to get hurt if they recognize that a mistake has been made. On the other hand, the other political parties, they have publicly stated that if they win the next election, which is October 2015, that they would bring the census back. So the conclusion I draw from this is that this government will not bring the census back, regardless of how and who tells them about how bad the decision is, but another government.
And just to give a little bit of, to add to that, if I may, be a little more specific, the statistics that Dr. Sheikh's referring to, I think something like 700 or 800 entities complained at the time that the government was about to dismantle their long-form census. Seven entities, to give you the order of difference, said that it was a good idea. The government proceeded to remove it. So this is the kind of thing that we're up against, where you're dealing with, I think, head-on with ideology versus evidence-based anything. Next question. Sorry, please. Yes.
Just one thing quick. There was reference made to politicians paying particular experience to, or particular attention to business experience and business arguments. Just to note, on the Senate side, jurisdiction for the census is under the Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee, and within the past several years, probably the closest to a full-throated defense of the American Community Survey was actually made by Scott Brown during his brief time as ranking member, where he came up basically in full support of the ACS, based largely on the experience of an example that was laid out at a workshop that we had run, the Benefits and Burdens Workshop. They mentioned AIR, the insurance firm that uses the ACS as part of its models for impacts on coastline and flooding events and things like that, to monetize the risk in particular areas. But it's those kind of examples with the business community and impacts on the economy and on jobs that are going to be a huge driver.
Is what is also interesting, just before the next question, in Canada just last week, Dr. Sheikh, I'm not sure if you're aware that there's a private member's bill before Parliament to call for a return of the long-form census.
Yeah, and I'd also say that part of our collaborative includes the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the National Association of Home Builders, the Realtors, and the Shopping Center people, and they have carried the main burden in that. House of Representatives, I went with them for 25 separate meetings with various members of Congress before they voted to eliminate the ACS this year.
Thank you. Next question.
I'm Steve Gold. I'm the Director of Health and Community Services for Macomb County, Michigan, which is the large county north of Detroit. I'm pleased to hear that there are business interests as part of the consortium, although I'm distressed to hear that they weren't more effective. I'm not a bit surprised that political leaders are not responsive to public health people or to other governmental interests, given the climate. I'm a little surprised that the marketing and business planning interests are not more effective in maintaining good data about who there is out there to market and sell to. And my only other comment, really it's a comment and it, you can respond if you see an opportunity to, is that there are a substantial number of people at this conference whose professional expertise is in risk communication, something that we do not do a good job of in public health. I would suggest there are opportunities for you to talk to risk communications professionals at this conference and devise a strategy that might effectively communicate the risks attendant on devaluing the census and the ACS.
It's a good point. Thank you. I would say this about some of the offices that we attempted to see, especially in the House of Representatives, with the Chamber of Commerce as the lead. This you'll find interesting and perhaps disappointing. There are actually offices in Congress now, new members of Congress, that won't see the Chamber of Commerce and their representatives because they see them as two status quo.
Okay, any other response to that? Thank you. Next question, please.
My name is Shri Mule. I'm the Associate Dean of Community Health and Humanities Division in the Faculty of Medicine at Memorial University in Newfoundland and Labrador. I had, before the panel got underway, I had gone up to Dr. Sheikh and I had asked him, what can we do about this garbage data? Because obviously, the whole abolition of the mandatory long form was a very political decision. It was precisely for the reasons that Dr. Sparks had spoken about, which is if you don't know, then you don't have to address the problem. But the issue is that we do have the census, which has nonsensical data. And I should add that there was a great deal of protest by the business communities as well, quite apart from the academics and the numerous petitions that were sent out at that time, and which was completely ignored by the provincial, by the federal government, the conservative government. And our hope is that next time, that is in 2015 when we have the elections, that this government will be history for us. That is, I think it's not an unrealistic hope. I think that we need to have that kind of change because we have not only suffered at the level of this particular problem, but really there have been many retrogressive kind of laws that have been passed, and it has affected all aspects of life, including education, health, and all the things that were mentioned by the panel. But my question is that suppose there is a reversal and a new long form is introduced, what do we do with the 2011 data? Do we just throw it in the garbage and then move on and just rely on the short form census and then accumulate data over a 20-year period? Because that's basically what it would amount to. Am I right?
Well, what you've lost, unfortunately, there's no way to get that back. But I've done some work on the National Household Survey and suggested some ways where some parts of the data can be recovered if one was to use some econometric techniques to get something out of it. Of course, you'll never have the full set of data, but some parts may be recovered from it, in which case at least the whole area will be eliminated. There are other parts of the survey which just you cannot do much about, and unfortunately one of the main variables where the survey data are completely useless is the income information. And so my advice would be forget about the income data from the survey, let's use the tax data from the expense.
Thank you. Any other? Okay, next question please.
Obviously designed for somebody else.
There you go.
My name is Charles Gessert. I'm from Duluth, Minnesota. I think my question is principally for Phil, but anybody that could help out would be appreciated. I experienced as I was listening to you something I've felt many times before, and that's that my brain sort of froze when it got to the people that are not interested in facts, basically ideologically driven policymakers. And the anti-science, anti-information theme that we hear out of our various elected officials is so disturbing to me that my mind freezes up when I hear about it. So what I'm asking for is not so much reassurance, but if anybody has language that they could use or concepts that they would use in writing letters to the editor or working with their professional organizations or talking to their elected officials, what concepts should we be using to combat this anti-science mentality that we find so disturbing?
I was going another direction until you said that last sentence in terms of concepts for anti-science. I would say, maybe, I hope I answered your question a little bit, in terms of trying to defend what we're trying to defend here in terms of the ACS and the decennial census, to use the words community, locality, and neighborhood, and how this data gets to them, perhaps it relates to science too. If you can't make a connection directly to people's everyday lives and their kitchen table, you're not going anywhere, which is frankly the reason I named the American Community Survey, and I did it on purpose when I was at the Census Bureau, because it had community in it. And I think that's what we all have to remember in terms of this, that when we talk about these figures and we talk about this data, it really comes down to everyday lives, and if we can't translate it to people in that regard, then we don't really have a very good chance, because data is ethereal, and that's up in Washington, and that was statisticians and demographers, and I don't know any of those. So that'd be my advice in terms of that, but maybe others on the panel have some other advice.
Shannon.
I'm not sure if it's advice, but I mean, one thing one could do is look at some of the options if you don't have the data. So mm-hmm. what could happen? Yeah, so scenario planning, where people might be interested in clear, very clear language, non-scientific language in a way, about what happens if you don't have the data based on accurate information. So what could go wrong? And sometimes journalists and others would find that a very interesting thing to talk about, and I would get it much more in public.
That's the reason why New Orleans was rebuilt. If they didn't have the data to rebuild, where to place the schools and all the other things that they've done in New Orleans after Katrina, it would have been even a greater disaster.
It's not quite an answer, but I mean, just a communication challenge probably worth mentioning. And it might be replacing one hard-to-explain concept with another, but the thing that's held back a lot of debates, a lot of the discussion, and when you get into the privacy element of it and the intrusiveness of specific questions, the point that's never really been successfully landed is that the Census Bureau / the government / the enumerator, the door, whoever, doesn't give a damn what time you leave the house for knowing what time you leave your house. It doesn't give a damn about whether you feel dizzy going up a flight of stairs just for that piece of information. What they care about is, in aggregate, mapping the individual response to the community. We always just sort of hide behind or revert immediately to, well, the data will be used for statistical purposes, like that's going to clear everything up. But that notion of individual answers leading to indicators for our community has never been successfully landed.
Next question. Hi.
Well, hi, I'm Lynn McIntyre from the University of Calgary. I'm also chair of the Canadian Public Health Association, a member of the Canadian Society for Epidemiology and Biostatistics, and we did a really valiant fight for the retention of the mandatory long-form census. And I think it was, basically textbook excellent way of trying to advocate and ultimately, of course, unsuccessful. And your own resignation, Dr. Scheich, you know, you can't actually do more in terms of putting a position forward. So I'd like to offer a couple of comments around perhaps another way of looking at it. I don't think the issue was privacy. The way that it was originally brought up by a conservative member of our government was you could go to jail for not filling out a stupid form. And so this issue of mandatory leading to jail, that kind of thing was totally sufficient to completely override the notion of collective responsibility and the collectivity, and that these extreme measures, never having ever been invoked, were really just there as a persuasive technique. And so that's what public health faces, is that a single individual right, if not interpreted with any other sense of collectivity, is actually able to overrule, in our case, perhaps 34 million people. I'm not exactly sure what the real number is now. So I think the privacy is not the same as mandatory fine, go to jail. And I think that's what we're not able to win very successfully. And we've got to keep on, because that's about all of public health, right? The collectivity and collective good. And so those are things that are still. The other is that this ridiculous amount of extra 30 million was because of the belief that if you just tell people and you promote, it's all agentic. Everything that can make people do things is agentic. Tell them, count me in, count me in. You see the ads, they went crazy. And it was, again, the best example ever of an experiment of trying to get people to do something voluntary and trying to exhort them, and they don't. So, and that is, again, a public health sort of revisiting constantly. Tell them, tell them, tell them, social market, whatever, and I think we've been able to show that. So the last area is that when they released the National Household Survey and tried to do the front page coverage, it really looked like propaganda stories. Little tiny tidbits of facts around Canada, the most you could ever say that was not completely erroneous, with no meaning around what it was. And I think that's another problem. These are propaganda tools. Ultimately, as you also mentioned, we are able to cure poverty with basically that census. So, and then today, all we have is a private member's bill, which I looked at yesterday, and it's really not that hot, so it's probably not going to go anywhere either. So it is really, really problematic. But I think this is a story not only of the census, but it is a story of public health and having to figure out perhaps other ways.
Thanks, Lynn. Any comments? I just appeal to you to keep it short. We have one more question only, and then it'll be 2 o'clock upon us. So is there any response to Lynn's exhortation? Thanks. Stan Weiss, please.
Stan Weiss from Rutgers, New Jersey Medical School. First, I'd like to commend you for your presentations and your efforts to further expand everyone's awareness of these important issues. But as you alluded to, it's just the tip of the iceberg that you refer to in this session about the dismantling of databases that are critical. So I was wondering if you could briefly comment on some of the related other issues that you haven't had time to address, such as other countries which are following the models. For instance, other developed countries, Australia, New Zealand, what's happening there. And other places in the world which have even more structural problems. And then countries such as the Soviet Union in Russia dismantling databases such as about cancer or recoding data about mesothelioma and it's only lung cancer, no one can retrieve any cases of that occurring, making the problem go away. So if any of you want to address some of those issues and where we need to go beyond even just the census.
Thank you, Sam. Anyone like to respond? Please.
All I can tell this is that I personally don't have a lot of knowledge about other countries, and I suspect other people don't either. So perhaps that this is a worthy of research paper where we're looking at what happens across different countries, because clearly there's not no one paper that analyzes and looks at it and says, is this a trend in other places? So something overarching,
that's not very useful. Okay, I'm sorry, is it a very brief comment or a question?
I'm an APHA staff member.
Okay.
I just want to say thank you to the panel on behalf of APHA, the distinguished panel, and the information that you presented, to us. I just also want to mention that when we gave the call for special sessions, we had about 23 responses, and we only have 9 special sessions, and so we thought this was a very important, you know, session that, you know, out of the 23, there were only 9 sessions, and we were selected. So unfortunately, we didn't have any mandatory. we only have about 80 staff members in our office. About 50 or 60 of us are here, and each one with major responsibilities. So, you know, we have maybe about 25,000 to 50,000 members, but we couldn't ask them, all of them, to come here as well. So on behalf of APHA, just thank you very much. The information was. It's critically important, and we are looking forward to your book for your paper, you know, the writing that after this meeting. Thank you again.
Well, thank you for that clarification. Much appreciated. Okay, I'll hand back now to Robin Taylor Wilson to sum up. Thank you very much.
So I just want to thank again APHA for allowing us to have this session. I really want to thank you, those of you in the audience today, for helping us think critically, for helping us think about strategic communication, how we move forward. I welcome your continuing comments and suggestions. We will be looking for help on manuscripts, etc. And, you know, as Phil is saying, we're in a critical period, a critical 30-day period, and so I think our response in a timely fashion is also going to be critical. And I think one of the things I picked up on in terms of, of strategic communication, we had members of the audience talking about risk communication as one option, Shirley talking about other methods of strategic communication, and I think if I had been standing in line, I would have asked our panel to talk about, what do we talk about return on investment? Do we need to be speaking in those kinds of terms? And maybe that's something we need to think about a little bit more critically. And certainly with, there's over 300 known and documented uses of the current U.S. Census, and so I think if we can communicate that effectively within our own discipline, and to keep policymakers and the general public, we have a lot on our plate. So again, thank you to our panelists. If you would join me in thanking them one more time, thank you.